Hello, and welcome to the Writing Redux podcast. I'm Beatrice Otto, and today I'm going to read to you a short essay I wrote a few years ago about memorizing poetry. I still memorize poems, and I regularly revisit those I haven't turned over in my mind for a while. I'd always be happy to hear from any reader or listener who has recently memorized a poem, and I'd be curious to know what and why they were prompted to learn it by heart. This piece I wrote, it was prompted when I came back from a lovely four-day Easter break with my husband, and a friend sent me an essay he quoted by Jim Holt in the New York Times that was all about learning poetry. It was always, you know, I always find it good to hear of people who learn poetry by heart, and this essay was inspired by that extract from Jim Holt's thoughts on learning poetry. I only know one or two people who do this. There may be others. I suspect there are many who commit things to heart but never find an audience receptive enough to let them recite. We seem to have moved from an oral culture to a written one, perhaps losing the habit of listening to people recite poetry or even read out things out loud. It seems difficult for many, partly because they try to understand poems in a way they wouldn't try to understand a painting. They might look at a painting and take it in at some level or other without asking what that patch of colour means or that brushstroke. Yet they can trip over themselves trying to unpack a line from a poem and miss the poem. And the reciter, unused to an audience, can falter over lines which flow faultlessly in silent or solitary recitation. Jim Holt said he knew about 100 poems. Like him, I know quite a few, though I doubt it adds up to 100, though I'm more concerned about the hundreds I don't know than the dozens I do. Holt suggests in his essay that some people learn easily as if by osmosis, whereas others, like himself, have to work at it. For me, it's a messy mix. The short ones, or those with rhymes or obvious rhythms, aren't necessarily easier to learn. Some I have to build in my mind in a patiently sedimentary way. Others I swallow in a couple of bouts of rereading start to finish, such as 34 lines from Victor Hugo's The End of Satan, which depicts hell not as fire, but as freeze, arctic blasts of nothingness. Somehow those lines just seem to imprint themselves on my memory. Cavafy's Ithaca was the same. Unlike Holt, I don't learn a few lines a day, as I need to hook them together to create the whole. So I usually learn a whole poem or two in one sitting, which limits how many I learn because I need a sense of mental space and time to take in the whole poem. Then I'll reread and recite, revisiting from time to time, to fix things in the long-term memory bank. It's a wonderful feeling when the poem is so firmly in your heart that it recites itself. Many people who have barely learned a line of poetry know this feeling from their capacity to sing a song. And sometimes you forget the poem, but not the lines. That is, you forget about the poem, but when you recall its existence, you find the lines are still there, waiting to be heard. After 20 years buried, this bursts one day into my consciousness, prompted by a sight of amber, recalling the phrase light-filled. This is an Anglo-Saxon poem, very short. There was once many a man, mood glad, gold bright, of gleams garnished, flushed with wine pride, flashing war gear, gazed on wrought gemstones, on gold, on silver, on wealth held and hoarded, on light-filled amber. Holt mentions his mental treasury, which is how I see the mind, though Lee Siegel refers to it just as eloquently as the home entertainment centre. As a girl, I wanted mine to be full of gems I could carry everywhere, weightlessly, like pulling a beloved book out of a saddlebag. The Russian poet Gumilev describes how his readers, I quote, carry my books in their saddlebags, leave them behind on a sinking ship. When bullets whistle around, When waves split the ship's side, I teach them to be unafraid, he says. I wanted to go a step further and have a whole hefty anthology light in my mind, safe from salty soaking, so that on any grey day one can fly to a breath-catching dawn on an Adriatic cliff, or echo a breath-catching dawn right where you are. On a return flight from Greece, cleaving the Adriatic coast, I was able to pull this up and send it with a kiss back to its source. This is a poem, the first lines of a poem by Lawrence Durrell. This unimportant morning, something goes singing where the capes turn over on their sides and the warm Adriatic rides her blue and sun-washing at the edge of the world and its brilliant cliffs. The rest of the poem, by the way, is available in an audio podcast on this site. Holt recites poems to himself when he is jogging along the Hudson River, but I think that would be hard, as your breathing, paced to the pounding of feet or the gasping of an oxygen-grasping heart, would struggle to pace the poem. But just about anywhere else is game. Supermarket checkout, train ride, on the bus, walking, of course. Concert, to the splendid accompaniment of an entire orchestra. I once learned a page of poems in a concert hall, though I realised I wasn't doing the music justice, so I didn't do it again. And if you try this trick, make sure the poem sits on one side of a sheet of paper so you don't bother your neighbours by turning the sheet over. The best time to learn is the magic hour of morning on the balcony, or at least that's what I find. I've now come to the end of the first batch, about 15 pages, and have lined up the next to learn. Some extracts of Pope's version of Homer's Iliad, a few verses of Ted Hughes from his Tales of Ovid, which describes antediluvian chaos as, I quote, a huge agglomeration of upset, and also some quotations from his birthday letters, as well as a sparkling selection I've been setting aside. For the first time, I would also like to tackle passages of prose. That could prove more challenging, but surely worthwhile for the joy of being able to random access a description of the only dog I regret I never met. But then his owner is the only dead man with whom I've ever fallen in love. Meet Barone, as Carlo Levi portrays him in his book Christ Stopped at Eboli. This is just the opening lines of the description. His face was handsome like that of a Chinese dragon, terrifying in his moments of anger or when he bared his teeth, but with round, almost human hazel eyes that followed my movements without his even turning his head. The rest of the quote is also available in an audio podcast. Maybe one day I will be able to recite this and you will indulge me. But I wonder if I ever learn the whole of the Pied Piper of Hamelin. Who will have patience to hear? Thank you for listening.